Welcome to Beyond Leading, the podcast that cuts through the noise to get real about leadership, team dynamics, personal growth, and the messy, brilliant reality of work, life, and everything in between. Each episode brings grounded insights, sharp truths, and honest conversations from experienced coaches and leaders as we explore what it really takes to lead well today. We don't deal in one-size-fits-all answers. We spark ideas, offer grounded perspective, and create space for you to work out what fits your world. And every episode comes with a free fact sheet to help you take the ideas further. Just use the link in the show notes or visit beyond-leading.captivate.fm. Hello and welcome to this edition of Beyond Leading. I'm joined by Harrison Ward, better known as Fel Foodie. He's an outdoor cook, author, and mental health advocate whose journey from battling addiction and depression to cooking gourmet meals on mountaintops has inspired thousands. After making a major life change in 2016, Harrison found purpose through hiking and rediscovering his love of cooking, turning the fells of Cumbria into his open-air kitchen. His story has been featured on the BBC's Mary Berry programme and in his debut cookbook, Cookout. But beyond the food and adventures, it's his openness about mental health and personal transformation that really stands out. And that's exactly why we are so glad to have him with us today. Harrison, a huge welcome to the podcast. It's such a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you both for having me. It's great to be here.
When I heard you speak at Carlisle Rugby Club last year during your talk on International Men's Day, what really struck me beyond the outdoor cooking and adventure was your openness, the way you shared your experience of facing what felt like huge personal challenges and how you turned things around really stayed with me. And it reminded me of so many people I work with who can feel stuck or overwhelmed and begin to believe that change just isn't possible. So I'd love to start with your story in your own words. What was life like before all this began and what sparked the change for you?
Thank you. Thank you for that wonderful intro. I guess trying to condense this all down into all my life story into a quick snippet here. Yeah, I guess these days obviously best known for heading out into the fells in the Lake District, calling Cumbria my home and trying to share those stories, as you mentioned, that I've been through to really try and add that voice to the conversation, I think, trying to deplete that stigma around mental health and just know that people aren't alone going through these moments. As you touched upon, change can be quite a daunting thing, both for personal and for business. So for myself, it's just trying to open up to that sort of point there that we all make mistakes. We can all reset. We can all realign and move forward on that path. But for myself, I found myself really in my teenage years in a very different place, going through, I guess, puberty, quite a major point of change for all of us in life. Really went from being this quite happy-go-lucky sort of carefree character to all of a sudden being hit with this sort of sense of insecurity and sort of self-loathing, demotivation, and not really knowing what I was going through at the time. And I suppose the internet was in its infancy back then. You weren't really hearing many sort of film stars and musical stars speaking out about issues they were having. So I felt very much I didn't know what this was that I was experiencing. It was just all of a sudden like this was now my cross to bear and this was just life going forward. But I put on this mask, really. I didn't want to bring people down with how I felt around me. I didn't really want to share these darker thoughts because I guess you don't want to be known as that sort of person. Perhaps you'll be a burden to people in various moments and try to bring down maybe a positive sort of action in life. So I kept this really to myself, put this mask on. I suppose played up and acted this character, actually, that all things were fine and pushing things forward. But internally, really was struggling with my sense of purpose, as you touched upon, who I was, what life was going to be like for me going forward. And at moments and at this worst point, really battling with my existence on this planet. And it was something that I just completely kept to myself throughout these years. So again, I had plenty of friends at school. There was nothing untoward into the family life at home. So no real trigger point to cause this moment, other than that, maybe that switch around to puberty years. But during this point, I also found myself working a lot alongside my studies in the pub trade. So I got a little job at 13 at a pub in North Cumbria, washing the pots in there, moving on to waiting on, and finally behind the bar at sort of 18. When you came of age, alcohol was allowed to be dispensed at that age legally. And it was very much a different introduction for me into that world around alcohol. Now, again, as we know, alcohol in Britain can be quite a cultural sort of movement there, quite a big sort of rite of passage going into the pub at 18, maybe going for a drink with your dad or with your mates on the town. And it was something that quite quickly I fell into that path of enjoying that sort of social side again, meeting people from all different walks of life. But it's also using this sort of substance, like, was kind of shutting off some of those darker thoughts in my head. And at the time, I didn't really notice this at all at the start. But kind of found that as tolerance sort of built and I was using alcohol maybe more at the time just socially, that again, I was being alleviated from those sort of darker thoughts somewhat when I was out drinking. So it was something that really I wanted a bit more, because it gave me that escape in a way from really that sort of turmoil that was going on internally. And tolerance began to build. So it was one or two beers, 18, sort of stumbling home from the pub back home back then, began to build more and more, more nights out on the town, taking more shifts in the pub trade alongside my studies. And by the time I moved away to York for university around 19, a year later, changing my tact and changing my avenues, I was really quite a daily drinker, using this now as a medicinal tool to silence those thoughts in my head. And I didn't see any issue with this at the time. I just saw this as quite a passage, quite a bit of bravado, I suppose, quite blokey as well, perhaps rural roots too. It was like I could put a bit of drink away. It was seen as a bit of a badge of honour in some ways. So I didn't see any issue towards this. But knowing internally that also I was still struggling with these moments of who I was and really where I was going in life and battling sort of suicidal ideations and stuff moving forward. So my studies quickly began to fall by the wayside, really, as alcohol further and further took over my life. I got a job in the pub trade in York quite quickly again. It was somewhere I felt quite at home in. It was somewhere that was suiting my lifestyle. It was also providing some finance to live this lifestyle as well, because I wasn't someone that was living on bank of mum and dad or anything at the time. So it was trying to fund my studies through this sort of path too. And really, again, that became my priority moving forward, because I guess it was prioritizing myself and my existence, really, as opposed to not really seeing my path moving forward. And all of this really was still trying not to be that burden to other people. I think for myself, I was the bottom of the heap. My lowest priority was myself. But for other people around me, I didn't really want to try and cause issue to them. So I almost kept myself sedated in a way using this substance. Now, around 21, life had really begun to snowball for me in multiple ways, and mentally, physically, and I guess what was now turned into sort of my addiction at the time too. I ballooned in weight to about 22 stone. I put about 7 stone on for moving to York. I had taken up smoking at the time. I was drinking in excess of 20 pints a day at my worst at this point, literally brushing my teeth with the stuff in the morning, whilst highly functioning, working my way up the pub trade still, whilst those studies had obviously fell apart in the distance, but still not speaking out about what I was going through at all, just very much suffering in silence. Yet physically, there was probably something quite noticeably different-wise from that outlook. But again, I still didn't see this as anything other than that sort of just natural sort of path, young blokes sort of going through that path, like to be social, like to go out. And again, hiding those inner sort of darker secrets to myself. And there was a moment, there should have been a moment of change at this point at 21, where I had a lot of friends come to visit me in York, came for a particularly big celebration, again, a milestone birthday, I suppose. And again, as we tend to do in sort of culture, it was very much down the pub most nights for a good sort of 5-day celebration. And as they one by one went back to where they lived, respectively, in the country, it began to dawn on me really how actually alone I was in this city. You know, I saw many people from behind the bar on the other side of the bar, meeting people in town. I knew many people working in all different avenues, and I guess falling in the kebab shop at 4 a.m. in the morning, talking to the chap there. And maybe it should have dawned on me sooner that my best friends perhaps were takeaway owners and bartenders back then. But it really dawned on me how alone I actually was in the city, and the lifestyle I was leading was all just really quite insular and quite reclusive. I didn't have a phone or anything at the time. I didn't like to be contacted, but just literally just keeping myself on ice in this sort of drunken turmoil to avoid speaking out about what I was going through. And I made a call home to my mum in the early hours at this point, again, far under the influence. I made a call with really one intention, and it was to say goodbye. I didn't feel like I'd go any further. I didn't feel like alcohol was providing that escape from anymore. But what was initially a bit of a medicinal tool for me was definitely becoming more of a poison and dragging me down further in this sort of mental turmoil. And really, I saw no way out other than really shuffling off this mortal coil. And it was something that really should have been a major sort of moment of change, a moment of catalyst moving forward. And I did return to Cumbria briefly. I sought some medical help at the time for the first time, speaking out about what I've been going through, perhaps now at this point for 8 years in silence. But in honesty, I was quite annoyed at myself. I felt like I'd let slip this secret again, being under the influence at the time. It was a bit of a chink in the armor. I'd let someone into this sort of guarded secret, and I wasn't willing to change. And I moved back to York quite quickly, bought myself a train ticket, moved back to the city, and continued this same lifestyle moving forward for another sort of 4 or 5 years, just drinking myself to blackout every night, oblivion, and just really not facing head on these issues I was going through. And I suppose the irony there of not wanting to be that burden to anybody at the start, now quite clearly with this sort of addiction and using this substance, I was becoming a burden to those loved ones around me, whether it was financially, whether it was unreliable, whether it was just the way I was acting in certain bits. I wasn't an aggressive individual, but I was certainly someone that you would make a bit of a scene of things, really, and was probably drinking far to excess of other people in social occasions. Yeah, it was just something that really was a path that I couldn't see any way out of, I suppose. I still wasn't really seeing it as an issue. I didn't see myself now. I'd class myself as a recovering alcoholic these days. I was 9 years sober from that day in 2016, that sobriety point. But I wouldn't see really that as an issue at the time. I just saw it as very much just that was what it was. I was good at it. I put a lot of practice in. It was my interesting environment I was working in. If I was going out into town after my shift, I called it market research half the time. I was sort of very much in that element of using that tool. But it was only really finding myself in a relationship at the time, something I'd really strived for, something I really wanted to share life with somebody else, or to share that love, really, that really coming to terms with the fact I was already in one relationship with the alcohol and this with the partner, my girlfriend at the time, the two didn't really cross over very well. It was living two sort of avenues, weaving it in amongst, trying to get my quota, as I dubbed it, to try and get to that point of really mental shut off. And of course, this was causing various arguments, causing various letdowns, and people around her, it was directly affecting that sort of moment. And one particular moment, I went out after an argument. I wouldn't face them. I'd just go straight out and drink upon these. And I went out and I acted unfaithfully to this partner. And right, it was the end of that relationship. But really, I think it just made my whole really foundations crumble beneath me, who I believed I was as a person, to do this on something that I really wanted, to someone that I loved. I couldn't blame the alcohol for this. I had to blame myself. I had to be accountable for these actions, even though the substance was perhaps enabling that more. It was still me who'd done these bits, and I'd really caused hurt to somebody else. So again, that burden at the start mentioned, I now inflicted that sort of pain on somebody else. And it really made me look very introspectively at myself and how far I'd fallen. I didn't feel like I was the person I'd become. I saw myself as quite an honest person. I saw myself as a loyal person. Yeah, I was in exactly the opposite way. And it was that day on the 6th of June, 2016, that I think I came to terms with the fact that I was an alcoholic. I was quite powerless to this substance. I got myself in an avenue that I fell so far down this rabbit hole, not sharing what I was going through and really just trying to keep myself present in this world, that really something had to change. And I suppose I had two options at this point, really. One was supposed to commit the ultimate. The other was to try and pick myself up and put my hands up and try and show accountability, which I felt at the time for that partner, that was the most honest thing I could do, really, was the fact that I had caused this pain. So I had to stand up and say, this is me and I need to get some help here. And from that moment, I lived in York, I said, for 7 years, many friends there, many people I knew. Literally overnight, I left this city. I didn't say goodbye to anybody. I didn't stop and have my notes at the time. In fact, those bridges had been rebuilt with previous employers and stuff at the time. But at the time, for me, it was just such a fractured moment in my life that everything came crumbling down. Who I believed I was, everything I'd built as a personality just disappeared. And I had to leave this city behind. And I came back to Cumbria, where I was from, put my hands up really on my personal Facebook page at the time, to friends and family, and just said, look, I've had to leave this city. I'm really struggling with alcohol as a substance. These issues have been underlying for a long time, my mental health, my depression, my suicidal thoughts, and I need to seek help for this and move forward. And that was it, 6th of June, 2016, which was the point that I'll get to as far as that story and bring you back to self.
Harrison, you've brought us to the 6th of June, 2016, but then there was a change, and I'd love to know more about how you decided on the course that you were going to follow next. Because you've reached the bottom at this point, but there has to be a next chapter. There has to be a where to next. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having this conversation today. So how did you decide on what you embarked on, and how did that lead you to where you are today?
I suppose looking back on that moment now, it's easy to look back, isn't it, and be reflective on thoughts and there and calculated moments and perhaps a strategy and things, but there really wasn't any at that point at all. It was your whole life's just reaching rock bottom, as you mentioned, and trying to pick yourself up from that point there. And, you know, I was hugely thankful for when I put that message out there to people. I'd reached a point of quite ultimatum, I guess, with a lot of friends and family. And it's something that I suppose with sort of substance abuse and even narcotics wasn't something I really dabbled in, but other people and stuff there, that there's an unconditional love that people have for loved ones in their life that can run out to a certain point when some of these substances take over. And I was very thankful that I started these people in my life looking back, because they were the huge support network that really picked me up at this moment. Again, reaching out, asking for help for other people, which again, I think as we talk about in business sometimes, again, knowing sometimes that it's all right to ask for help. It's not a problem, personally or business out there. We don't have all the answers at these points. But really, it was them rallying around to pick me up at this point. I'll be able to talk to you now today on this podcast. And for myself, alcohol had such a huge, left a hole in my life. To try and fill that, I had to think, what am I going to put in there? So I'm just going to avoid that temptation, avoid those moments of just sitting there and just trying to get to midnight every night and get another sober day under my belt. And it was trying to fill that with something. And really, I tried to, I was quite lethargic at the time. I was grossly overweight. I hadn't done any exercise for about 5 years, other than maybe walking pub to pub, really. I didn't really do anything else at the time. But trying to fill that hole with fitness to a degree. So I took myself down to the local gym. I set up my aunties for a week at the very start, and I got an old bike out of her shed. I think it was her bike with a little basket on the front. And I was taking that around the loop just to try and get myself out moving and fit in there and going for little walks and stuff at the time. There was many friends that turned up. One came to join me for a cycle. One came to go for the gym. I went back to my mum's house. They knew where the family house was. But one friend turned to Brian and said, "We're going to go for a hike today, mate." And I was like, I've never really walked up a hill before or a fell or a mountain. I don't have any equipment. I don't know what to do. Well, how do you start? And I just put on what I had to hand, really, which was an old scabby trainers. I think I had a pair of shorts that, again, weren't really anything technical. And I suppose a jumper that I'd maybe wear on a Friday as my best jumper sort of thing. And he just took one look at me and said, "I can't take you out like that, mate. I mean, look at the state of you. Can't go hiking in the hillside there." But I didn't have anything. And again, I was so financially penniless as well. I'd spent a lot of inheritance I was really lucky to get from a great uncle that really all went down my neck at the time, a bit in there. Debts on credit cards and working behind the bar, I guess there was moments of having access to all those substances. Well, I didn't have any money at the time to move forward on this. So I was very much just completely rebuilding from the floor up with the support of others around me. And I got in his car anyway, and he drove to the Lake District and he stopped by an outdoor store in Penrith. And he grabbed this pair of boots off the shelf, asked me my size, plonked this pair of boots on the counter and bought me these boots. And it was a real show, I suppose, of faith and support at that early moment. We got back in the car. We went out another 20, 25 minutes. We pulled up at the base of Blencafra. Now, again, I don't know if anybody on the call knows Blencafra hugely, but one of the higher mountains in the Lake District, for someone that really hadn't done any exercise for 5-6 years, what was now looking to be quite a baptism of fire, staring up at this beam off of a mountainside for me. With my new boots, not really built in anything. So there I was at this hillside thinking, what have I got myself in for here? This was the second week of coming off everything else, going through the withdrawal from alcohol. I'm seeking medical help. I had gone cold turkey at the point, which isn't advisable with that amount I was drinking at the time. Cigarettes, pining for my ex. The whole life has just changed. And now literally just getting frog marched up this mountainside, literally one foot in front of the other, just staring at my feet, absolutely sort of gasping for breath for going up the hillside, really. And there was no time really for nice moments up there, stopping for laughs and chats or selfies or checking Strava routes and things like that. It was very much just trying to get this over with for me, I think. When's this going to end? Get to the top of the hill. And reaching the top of that hill, it was barely having a chance. There was no views at the time. It was very covered in cloud. There's a summit circle on the top, barely gasping for another breath. And that friend looks at me and says, "Right, next week, we're going to do Helve Ellyn." And this was really it. So a week later, again, things were going on in amongst that time, of course. I was still seeking medical help. I went to some sort of counselling, substance abuse counselling and bits around this point. I was just seeking all moments to me there. So I'd be absolutely lying if this was all just myself and moving forward. There was many people that were there that I do feel very grateful for at that time. And a week comes on, so I did a bit of sort of gym work again, back on my bicycle down the local routes. A week comes on, and now we're at Helve Ellyn. From the filmier side, staring up at this stone staircase to the top of the mountaintop. And the same again, it was just that one foot in front of the other, moving forward again, having the little stops on the way up and just trying to get through this mountaintop, getting to the top and not really having any purpose. I think it just felt a bit, I was on, I don't know, on this sort of challenge route, on this sort of this route for redemption in some ways, just trying to get myself back on an even bit, trying to prove I could change. But a lot of this was for that person, that partner back in York. I'd be lying if it wasn't. A lot of this was out of love, trying to prove that I wasn't this person. Change behavior being the best apology was a quote that I read at the time. Just trying to throw myself into this route. Many doubters, people I knew in York, they were like, this is going to be a fad. He's going to be back drinking in a couple of weeks, all this sort of stuff. And just trying to move forward. But there wasn't any clear vision. There wasn't anything beyond that day. It was just trying to get to midnight each day, another day sobriety, trying to be better than the person I was yesterday and moving forward one step at a time. But up this mountainside, it certainly felt like this was a bit of a physical manifestation of that journey, really, pushing on the uphill struggle, not knowing what was to come, what was at the summit, not knowing what was there, but having to have that faith really to push forward.
You've moved beyond that now. You've moved beyond just one foot in front of the other and you've turned it into something. What was the change? What was it that brought about that change from just plodding on being led by somebody else to actually starting to plot your own course?
There was a long period of this that was, I suppose, punishing myself in a way. It was trying to really prove that I wasn't that person. It was trying to gain apology through that action, as I mentioned. So a lot of this really was quite selfless, I suppose, at the start. It wasn't for myself at all. And really, it was only trying to push and prove to those people that I wasn't the person that I could be. So as time went on, I think I realized this was more for me rather than for anybody else. It was for those around me, the ones that were close. It was those that had shown me support. And really, I think that was a moment that maybe only came in maybe about 3 to 6 months into this journey. As sobriety became a bit easier for myself, I was starting to get a lot fitter in the mountains. I was starting to do a lot more of these activities. That hole was getting filled somewhat in life. But it was something that really wasn't a conscious goal at all in any of this. I think I was just trying to rebuild things, trying to really get sober, trying to prove that life could get picked up for me. And there was no plan other than that. Career-wise, had gone. I'd worked my way up the trade in hospitality. I'd left university in New York. I'd moved to the city and knew a lot of people there. That was gone. Everything that I had was starting again. So it was very much something that, I suppose in elements, I just trusted the path in ways. I just saw what opportunities came towards me. And when they did get presented, obviously I was making those subconsciously to get to those points that I just walked through those doors at the time and just tried to really better myself each day.
You've mentioned a couple of times about being held accountable. Accountability was key. You had the support network. You were driven. Part of this was the support network and been out of love. But when for you do you feel that you developed your own accountability? Say, for example, the support network wasn't there. There wasn't someone you were in love with that was that other accountability partner. When did you feel, actually, this is now about me? I'm holding myself accountable to this change.
That's an interesting one. I suppose there's still moments now where this isn't a linear journey at any point. So it's not something that obviously there's a change point. That's it. It was a right turn in my life. And it was very much a different direction to where I was on. But it's a journey that still had its ups and downs from that point. And I think earlier on, these were big, big mountains and big crevasses, whereas now it's more sort of little peaks and valleys where things are a lot more stable, but there are still ups and downs to go through that point. And I've certainly had moments along that path that I've had to reset and realign myself going forward, where I may have fell off that path somewhat. I've not, thankfully, not fell off that path with alcohol at all. That's been something that's made me a mainstay, not a drop since that day. But I mean, food, which we touched upon, is a big passion of mine. But can also be something that I struggle with the moderation side of there sometimes. And certainly during lockdown, where a lot of my positive vices like the gym and going to the mountains were restricted, all of a sudden it was back home again. It was, again, there was a lot of self-discipline. Some people doing all the home workouts, and I'm someone that needs to be in a different environment sometimes. I mean, get out there to get that sort of mindset to move somewhere else. But I fell back on food quite a lot. I think that became a bit of a crutch for me there. So it's still a work in progress. It's not something that's about 2016, that's it, everything's grand now, moving forward. We've reprogrammed. We're all fine. It's a constant sort of adjustment and realign, reset. But I think, again, like anything in life, things don't always go to plan that we set in front of us. You've sometimes got to reflect, you've got to sit, and it's okay to then put us back onto the rails and go, this was the journey, this was the purpose I was aiming towards. Let's go back onto that route and move forward and get progress again. And of course, you may fall off that track once again, and that's absolutely fine. You'll be further down the line with more progress than you were where you started. So all of this was very much one day at a time for me. It was just trying to be better than the person I was yesterday. And I had a lot of insecurities, I suppose, as well, about looking at other people and what people were thinking about me from the outside. And again, thinking about the thoughts that I was, the people were having about my journey and stuff there. Even strangers in the street was going, if I was running overweight, it was going, oh, they're going to think, what's he up? He can't run down the street. Look, he's not going very fast, not going very far. And a lot of it really was quite beating myself up those dark inner monologue once again. But it became a lot about really for me just beating that person at home on the sofa. So if I was sat there doing nothing, that was zero progress. But any progress I could make out the door, just crossing that threshold of the front door sometimes, was progress. So it was very much an insular journey. It was very self-structured at that point. Yes, there was, I suppose, the goal to try and right my wrongs in New York. But as time went on, it was just a battle with one person. That was me really moving forward. So it was trying to beat that ghost of my former self at all times and really pushing forward on that journey.
So it sounds like there's part of this is a lot of self-reflection, getting that time to just sit and think, where am I today? What's been happening? Has it gone as I planned? How do I need to readjust? What do I now need to do to get me going? But having that time just to sit quiet or silence and just thinking, I need to self-reflect. What's happened?
Yeah, I took up many things at this point, really. I mean, something else I found quite useful at the time, I did a lot of journaling at the time, something I'd never really have done before. Again, it was actually my ex-partner that gave me this book and said, I think you should start writing down how you feel most days. And I was going, you know, what's that going to help? Writing down my thoughts in the book, what's that going to do or anything? But all things, it just became a little ritual for myself. And again, with the sobriety, I spent all my time, you know, pub to pub at that point, but I spent a lot more time doing more sort of cafe crawls at this point. So getting highly caffeinated through the day rather than inebriated. But I sat there quite often with a coffee cup and just writing my thoughts, things I'd done. It was little progress points. I mean, I was with my running, my hiking, weight, all sorts of stuff, and moving forward. So that became really quite a therapeutic thing for me too, that really naturally evolved when I started talking online more about this. I saw that very much as just my journal becoming public in a way. It was an online journal now. It was still really me just spilling out my thoughts to the world, but not really having any purpose towards it. It was just a bit of a dumping of what I'd gone through, getting those thoughts out of my head and getting a bit of a summary of how each day had gone through that point. So that became something that I found quite useful for me. And really, again, as I mentioned, a lot of people from the outside, how they were viewing you was definitely a thing, but it just became very much that sort of journey for myself of just trying to really prove to myself as well, I suppose, I can make these differences and these changes and bits there. But as you said about time to reflect, it's something that there's a privilege in that too, I suppose, in some elements. Life doesn't stop around us, of course, when this goes on. It's not a case of, I need to take a moment for myself now. Everything's on pause. That's it. All the bills, can you just hold back on those for a month? And everybody around me, turn your phone off. Of course it doesn't. Everything goes on around you all the time. There's moments there that are still temptations. So there's difficult decisions to make. And sometimes that can be socially as well. People around you, I suppose. It might be people who don't really agree with your change that you've made, whether it's life, personal, or business. And you've got to be there. No, I'm sticking to my guns here, sticking to my purpose, trying a new change, and being strong in that action as well. But I was quite thankful that I would say the majority of people in my life were hugely supportive along this path and hugely encouraging. But there was many moments that you are very alone through this path as well. A lot of it was done so. A lot of the work's done behind the scenes in this point as well. The moments that you are sat, as we naturally do at home, just contemplating and trying to keep disciplined on various bits, trying to just be focused on that goal as such, and just make those small incremental changes to try and go towards that, which is something that's not always the best at, to be honest. I'm kind of a bit nauseous sometimes and wanting those sort of maybe instant effects, but you have to trust that path really and just try and make those small routes towards that ultimate goal.
I'm glad you mentioned reflection. I'm glad you mentioned journaling. In fact, both of you mentioned reflection. What about celebration? As coaches, Alec and I quite often are talking to clients who have got their eye on the ultimate goal and forget about celebrating the passing of each milestone on their way to that goal. How is that for you? What form does celebration, if anything? I'm not talking about alcohol here. I'm talking about just that appreciation that another step forward's been taken. How does that work for you?
Yeah, and that's a great point. I think it's something that perhaps even a British sort of trait there. So we struggle maybe to celebrate the little wins, don't we? I think we think, why are we patting ourselves on the back if we're not all the way there yet and stuff? And in self-praise can be quite a difficult one too, especially if you're someone that's been quite self-critical for a lot of your life at times. But really appreciating those small little incremental changes is a big thing. So for myself, it came to points where if it was reaching the top of that mountaintop for the first time, that was a huge moment, you know, a challenge getting to the top there, that celebration of reaching the summit, a real sense of achievement getting up there. And the next time it was pushing on, it was a bigger hill the next time, bigger one there. I began taking up running. I couldn't run a bath at the start. I couldn't run around the block. And it was 1K becoming 2, 3 becoming 5. And all those were positive changes. Then if you stayed at 5 for a while, you reached that point where you couldn't get past that bit, but you were getting faster or you were going for longer. And those were all things to celebrate each time. And that was something that I really logged and accounted for. And you could see progress as well, which spurred you on further, I think. That was one of the beauties about journaling and reflecting. Even if it was just writing down business achievements in the side there or personal achievements, you can look back. You often forget those moments of change, the way you were. You can go, wow, that was me 3 months ago. Look where I am now. Look where I am. Look what we've changed, what we've moved forward, all these different connections. So there was a lot in that path, I suppose, or little congratulatory bits on the side, I suppose, that came up a bit, that came externally, I suppose, as well. Physically, obviously, I was changing quite a bit and losing the weight and stuff. So that was something that was nice to hear. And bits too, of course, that again spurred you on a bit more in other reflections. But I think it just became very much something that was just trying to really know that you could only do your elements in some ways and you couldn't take issues around you so much as personal hits towards that journey too. There was going to be bits that are going to go on. There was always distractions. There were some things that were really major moments, but try to really just stay aligned on that route for yourself and just trust that journey was a big route for myself pushing forward. So, yeah, it's funny to me because you look back at this point now and it seems like it's, when you talk about this and when I do the speech, when I do talking on the stages and you go through it so quickly and they go, well, oh, yeah, it was just very straightforward. That was it. It was just the one day he did this, I had to make a change. The next minute, he's living this life. But that first 3 months were immensely difficult for me. It was such a challenge. Every day felt like a little win. Every day was a pat on the back. It was just the sobriety. I was literally counting my hours. I was counting the days, every moment, every day, sobriety-wise. That was a self-win every moment. And as things go on now, I'm still thinking it's one day at a time approach. And I am sometimes thinking I'm still one drink away at certain points from that previous lifestyle. no matter how much years you've got under your belt. But I'm not looking at the days now. I'm not looking at the hours anymore. It accumulated to a much bigger figure. But at that moment there, it was very much just small little goals of progress and looking back at those moving forward. So, yeah, it was a really important thing. And I think one message I also saw a lot, sometimes you get people who doubt, or you get little moments even from a stranger in the street and so a bit. So a little comment that would just worm its way in. And that one negative comment amongst the 99 positives sometimes, it's the one that sits in your head and just worms away there. But for me, it became about keeping my side of the street clean as well in some ways, letting somebody else worry about theirs. If I was out every day sweeping the leaves, getting that done, the leaves were getting blown in every night again when the winds came back. And the guy on the other side of the road was going, what's the point? They're back again tomorrow. But it was for your own little sense. It was going, no, I'm going to keep this clean. It was a sense of pride, sense of purpose, and those small little wins daily. So keeping my side of the street clean was quite a little inner rhetoric I had as well.
Thinking of what you've been discussing there about journaling and reflecting and celebrating and one small step at a time, did that in any way contribute to Fail Foodie, your new creative business idea, or did that come from something else? How did all that form?
So I suppose, like I've already touched upon so far in this, that there hasn't been any plan or any sort of strategy to any of this, really. It's been very much an organic, natural snowball that I very much do embrace, and I am honest with that. It's not because somebody they're going, oh, this is how you do this, how you get to where I've been, and these sort of paths. There's certainly things you can do, of course, to make that more possible. These days, I'm standing here, you know, that's my business. It's been the last 3.5 years solely operating under that banner. But when I set up this account back in 2018, there was no visions at all for this becoming a business or even an income in any way. It was a way just to share what I was doing and document, as I mentioned, that journaling side of things. So I was documenting things in my personal journal. I suppose you were keeping yourself accountable in some ways by giving certain updates. It was like at the start, and I put my hands up going, I've got a change here. I could have kept that all quite secret. And for myself, that's an important note to make as well. I think that your story is your story. I think you should always reach out to somebody else and seek help when you need it. But that doesn't mean you have to go public. That's your choice to do this sort of thing. For myself, I felt as if it was just an element of accountability for me that was going to help me. People knowing what I was going through, not offering me a drink if they saw me in the pub or going, let's go for it. It was just trying to avoid those moments of temptation for me. So I just put it out there from the start. That's a very personal choice to make. When the Fail Foodie thing came about, I was doing a lot more cooking again at home. So again, I'd focused on, so the alcohol had been left, the cigarettes had been thrown in the bin. I was trying to get my fitness. I'd found myself in a good employment at this point. I'd gone from the pub trade to working at a local cafe in the Lake District and subsequently meeting the owners of a business in Grasmere. And I got offered a job. I was always quite good with computers, but I didn't have any previous experience. But I got offered the job running sort of the website management and sort of the logistics management for this little gingerbread firm in Grasmere. That maybe gives enough away about where that business is. And it was very much just right time, right place, and trusting that path. And I didn't really have any intentions of looking for this work. I was still trying to get myself back to York, in honesty, but it was trusting that moment. But it was giving me quite a strong foundation to move forward from, both rebuilding things financially, personally. I'd moved to the Lake District at this point from North Cumbria, where I was based originally, and moving forward on there. And I began cooking a lot more from home. So I always loved cooking. I loved our food, brought people together. And it was a real sort of show of love and gifting. You know, memories of being there around the table with the family, I suppose, on the Sunday, and moments that I really enjoyed that, watching programs on the television of that al fresco cooking, neighborhoods and community, how food was just that conduit for conversation. But it was also a nutritional aspect of I was trying to better myself and move forward mentally and physically. How I was fueling myself was quite important too. So it was no wonder in the days when I was putting down 15 plus pints of Guinness a day and then falling in the kebab shop, I wasn't feeling very good the next day. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to work out that equation. But in this now, going to the hillside, putting bad fuel source into a car and expecting to go 100 miles isn't going to work. So how I was feeling myself was quite important. And I'm by no means a nutritionist at this point. You know, I was still scoffing a nice bag of M&Ms after my dinner most days. But it was just more about getting some nice produce in there and enjoying that process of cooking and creating in that path. And at first, I became one of them people, Alec and Nick, that was taking pictures of my dinner and showing it to my colleagues at work. So really, I was one of those annoying colleagues who would go, oh, look, I made this last night. Look at this. And I think really it's put me off from showing them most days. They said, why don't you start an Instagram account and post these pictures on there? So that's all it was at first, was literally just somewhere to put pictures of my dinner. And I set up this account. And again, if I'm honest, looking back, I think I was still wearing a bit of a mask. I didn't really want to reveal it was me. I think maybe still there's a bit of, I don't know, shame or embarrassment. I don't know. Just something new, I suppose, as we do struggle being a beginner, especially when we get more adults in life. So I called myself the Fell Foodie because it was merging two passions. It was the love of the fells, which embraced the fact that I was proud to be from Cumbria and where I was and from the north, and a love of food. and Fell Food, you just had a nice little ring to it. And I started anonymously posting pictures on there with a badge, no picture of me, the dinners I was making, and the views I was getting from the hills when I was out walking. And that was it. And it began to snowball a little bit further, began to get a little bit of a modest following. I met some people from the community in the outdoors world where that was great learning. Because I was still learning about this. I didn't know a lot about it. I didn't know what the Wainwrights were. I didn't really know what I was going out to. Not something I'd really had that introduction to. So you met all these different worlds, different events, different cliques, different communities. And that was all wonderful. And around my second year of sobriety, so June 2018 at this point, I'd maybe gained about 1,000 followers on this account. And I decided to share my story in full on that account out there. And it wasn't, again, a calculated move. It just felt very natural on the day. Again, I suppose a bit of a self-win, as you touched upon, Nick, at the time. My second year of sobriety, I felt that's quite a proud milestone for me of where I was 2 years ago. And I just put it out there and just went, look, this is me. This is what I've done. This is where I was. And this is what I do now. And like that first moment of sharing my story to friends and family, the outpouring of support, the tales of similarity, the people who found the outdoors for similar reasons, it was really humbling and really empowering at the same time. People were using these different tools. And again, it was just the fact that whole stigma of suffering in silence, feeling so alone at the time, you were alone during this. There was many people going through moments, sometimes short-term, sometimes long-term, but I think it was just adding that voice to that conversation to make this more of an open topic to speak about. And it felt very relieving to do for myself as well, to put that out there. And that just sparked this journey on from there, where it led on to a little local publication, local newspaper. I got the ITV board, I got in touch with me locally here. A chap I used to serve in the pub, incidentally, when I was 18, back in one of my first jobs. He got in touch and said, would you like to share this story on camera? And I was going, well, I've never done that before. Okay, these opportunities are arising again, and just thinking, well, I can say no, I can say yes, there's an option here. We'll say yes, I've never done it before. I might fail, like me forever, know it as doing something stupid on camera, but I thought, what the hell, I'll share this. It can maybe help somebody else that's going through this path, who's further behind this path than I maybe am. So I shared that on there. It led on to another publication, led on to national media, magazines and newspapers, that then led on to what you mentioned on the television. It's all in a very natural, organic snowball that was never planned. It was just literally me sharing pictures of my dinner and then subsequently enjoying being outdoors and taking that love of food into the outdoors with me as this pseudonym, this nickname of Fell Foodie.
Wow. Inspirational.
One of the things for me, Harrison, is hearing you talk about it, it's a real passion that you have around things now. And I'm sure at the time, what you were doing before that moment on the 6th of June, you were probably quite passionate about what you were doing then, but there was a point of change. And then there was a period of travel that wasn't necessarily determined by you. But what comes across in hearing you speak now is, okay, you're not working to a plan, but there's definitely a passion there. So I hope you don't mind me sharing that observation with you, because I think that's important for anybody listening to the podcast, that actually we can be passionate about things, and choosing positive things to be passionate about is a conscious decision.
Yeah, thank you for that, Nick. I think it's something that recently I've been doing a lot of work on, perhaps my purpose, both personally and business lately and stuff in there. And in some ways, what has come out from it is I think I am living quite aligned to my purpose these days. I guess I am passionate about someone not going through the times that I've had. There's more and more of it in society these days, and more still of that embarrassment and stigma, which shouldn't be there at all. It's not necessary. There's no shame in speaking out about these things at all. Even if it's short moments. I mean, recently I know, the likes of yourself, I've had a different personal loss journey in terms of, I lost my father quite lately, and so that's a new journey for myself entirely, going through that sort of grief point. And that's something, again, that unfortunately a lot of us go through in life as a natural cycle of things. But that's another different thing. And again, that would be a point that previously, perhaps, the first thing I'd have done would just be just nullify that by just drinking myself to oblivion and just shutting off, not facing that sort of thing. But it's become a point that you have to be there and again and picking up for those around you and stuff, but also speaking about the difficult moments. It's not something that, again, you have to hide in and be worried about the fact that's caused internal pain or sadness, because that is normal. It's absolutely normal. And however you feel going through these moments in life is normal. For me, it's just cemented that, I think, from being that unknown, that school kid, from being sat in assembly watching some school talks at the time, guest speakers coming in, and just sitting there and really in my own head, just not knowing what was going on at all. Why am I feeling like this? This isn't who I believe I am, but really no fault of my own, but not just tapping my friend on the shoulder and being like, I don't feel great today, mate. I'm not feeling my best, so you know, I need some help. But just feeling worried about that, and why was that the case? And I feel like now things are beginning to change somewhat. And I suppose that's where the passion comes from, I think. It's much bigger than me. You're a custodian amongst this sort of path, a voice in the conversation, a voice for the voiceless, and just adding that to it. So it's a much bigger picture. So I suppose that's where the passion maybe comes from.
So thinking about what you've been discussing, and I'm relating this to the workplace, because we are seeing lots of fairly grim statistics about how people are feeling in the workplace. There was a statistic the other week saying 90% of us are unhappy. We're losing engagement. We're feeling stuck. I see this from some of my clients. We're aware of what we're doing isn't working, but we need to change. They know they need to, but they don't know how to. What would be your advice with those situations?
I think a lot of that, as you've said there, I think does come to that point of change. There's a big fear around it, isn't there? You see this sometimes even in the workplace, even if things, structures have changed. There's a merger in a business. It's very different to just individual roles in that path. We all tend to fear change in all respects and all avenues, where great things can come from change, really. A lot of things can rebuild going forward. But you sometimes got to take that leap of faith in certain ways and trust that path. But it's also knowing that it's okay to make a step and try something different. And it's okay to step back and go, actually, that didn't work as well. It's not something that has to be a permanent fixture in changing there either. So I think for myself, it's just embracing. I do very much live my life that sort of way, embracing opportunity as it appears in certain ways. I go in with very little expectations to things. Recently, I've been at quite a few events in various places. And it's like, why have you come to this today? And I've gone, I don't know, just for a very human sort of thing. They're just allowing that almost a bit of the serendipity in life, I suppose, in some ways. You never know. There was actually a chap, I was down in London last week, and I was always feel a bit of a country bumpkin when I go down the big smoker down there and try to set myself around. I was on the train. I'm usually there going, remember, you can't look at anyone on the train. You can't speak to anyone on the train. We're announced out now. And I had my headphones on, so I guess I was joined in with that whole sort of insular thinking. And the chap next to me kept trying to talk to me, and I was going, oh, I better talk back. I ended up having this fantastic conversation with this chap in the end on the train, and I thought, it just completely changed my day. I was there going, well, yeah, I didn't expect this being like this. Was the train into London now, that first sort of connection I've had, not thinking anything from it. I've had a wonderful story, set me up for the day, and I was just really just going around the city with a lot more of a smile, I think, just embracing things as moved on. So for me, it's very little expectation of where these things can come from sometimes, and just embracing what could be at the time. What's the worst that can happen half the time? It's all these little cliche sayings, isn't it? You know, we only live once in these paths. Why should you be stuck being miserable or being somewhere else or not wanting to go, looking ahead to where you want to be? What's stopping you from that path? What's the bits in front? And then breaking that down step by step. So that might be a big leap now. But if you break that down into chapters, perhaps into quarters, into sort of tenths, into there, then how can you do that progress each day to get to that point? And with a lot of things in life, best things don't come easy.
Which you've already outlined in saying that you just put one foot in front of the other. When you were walking up those hills, you put one foot in front of the other. And I think so many people want the instant gratification of just being able to reach the top and don't reckon with the hard miles, the hard steps that have to be put in to actually make the change. It reminds me, I saw a cartoon on LinkedIn, and it was two booths that you could queue at. And one was a queue for people who want change, and the queue was full. The other one was the queue for people who want to change, and it was empty. Mm. And I think therein lies the difference, just the inclusion of that word too. You reached a point where you wanted to change, and so you embarked on a journey. And I think, Alec, I'm looking at you as I see you on the screen here, but as I talk to people, a lot of people want change, but they don't necessarily want to change.
Uh-huh. Is it fear of change that stops a lot of people wanting it? Harrison's come up with a really important point there, is that sometimes when we want change, we look at it as, oh, this big project, this big thing we need to change. But actually, breaking it down into smaller steps, that can make that difference for a lot of people. We just maybe look at things as too big a goal.
It brings us back to that point about reflection. So as you accomplish each day, reflect on how that day went. It brings us back to celebration. Celebrate the fact that you made it through the day, that you made it through the day and achieved that next step. And then think about what the next step will be. And progress isn't just one giant step. Progress is made up of a lot of small steps, or being conscious, aware of them.
I suppose there's some moments too that progress could just be maintaining as well. It's not always an upward or a downward trajectory. It could just be a maintenance or something. Keeping things the same. That can be progress as well. You look at many things in that way. Yeah, that's just how I've always seen there. I think, as you mentioned, that sort of wanting to change is a big thing. I've found many people that have reached out to me over the years, whether it's for loved ones, whether it's for themselves, whether it's for friends, particularly in the substance side of things, substance abuse elements. And it has to become a point that I wanted to make that change at the time. And it's a very difficult thing to convey to someone, where you can't force that change upon somebody either. You hear these moments of ultimatums, you hear these moments of perhaps shaming these actions at times. And yes, I think it's important not to be a walkover on the other side of this. That unconditional love perhaps does get strained and can even run out to points. There is a tragic point to some of these moments that people don't find themselves out of that cycle. But it also has to come from that individual wanting that change, as you said, the want to change, rather than just the bit there. But there is a fear, isn't there, too, I think, sometimes, the way you touched upon that, to wanting to make that change, but just not knowing how as well. There's no blueprint as such for all these. You've just got to try things, I think, move forward. But again, that's where working with Gary Relaxy yourselves goes forward, seeking advice, seeking wisdom from other avenues, talking to someone who's found that route before. We talk about mentors quite a lot in the business world as well, finding someone of those routes. And again, or even speaking to someone else more senior or even friends. It's a lot of it comes down to reaching out, asking for help, whether it's both personal and business. It's just not being ashamed to put your hand up there and just say, look, I've never done this before. Can you help?
Nick, do you want to do a wrap up?
Yeah. I think if I would offer any kind of a wrap up, it would be this, that what you've outlined, Harrison, has been inspirational to listen to. And I'm sure has been inspirational to a lot of people, that you've made a major change in life and turned it into something which is positive for you personally, but positive for other people. But as Alec mentioned there, you have touched on so many things which are so important. Life is not necessarily easy, but life has to be undertaken. And we can't control everything, but we can control ourselves. And as we go on that journey, we take one step after another. So thank you for sharing that with us.
Very reflective pieces came up for me, certainly. It really makes you sit back and think about your own life and thinking what you're doing, how you're doing it. And I think one thing that's come through for me out of the many points raised, does this all link to being true to yourself, being comfortable with who you are and doing what you want? What would your thoughts be on that? Final word, Harrison, would that relate or not?
Authenticity, I think, ultimately has to be, yeah, at the core of most things we do. I think the minute you're putting that mask on, like I was as that young child, not sharing what I was going through, putting that mask on each day, you're playing a character. You're not playing your true self, really, internally, that you're putting something on to a certain degree. And I think in all actions you do, if you're doing something that you don't feel sincere in, perhaps that's even a certain employment side of things, you might not align your bits in there. That may be the reasons why you're not feeling great in the workplace. It may be a great salary, great people you're working with, but you don't agree with the message. Therefore, that's not feeling aligned with your true authentic self. And sometimes that could be the change that needs to be made. Other times it may just be a fact you may have fallen from that alignment somehow, maybe even forced. There's a lot of peer pressure at these points too, both in sort of friendships, families and business. We get pushed into avenues that perhaps we don't want to go into too much, but again, through that fear of being the one outlier within the path. But be that outlier. What's the worst going to happen? If someone backs you out there, being different is a big thing. That's a metaphor of that queue. Just step into that other side and being the first person in that queue. I'm sure other people will follow you. You just sometimes got to be that first person to go out that side of paths. And for myself, it's lovely to hear those kind of words you've had about my reflection and my journey, but it's very much something that I feel it's still very much a work in progress. I feel like I'm at a point really recently that I have to reset again and realign. I think there's certain bits that I've had to re-reflect on and move forward, but there's also things, as you say, life continues on, and you have to be present throughout it, and that may push you to ways you don't want to go at times, but that's okay as well, as long as you bring yourself back when things perhaps calm somewhat. When the storm calms somewhat, you can try to reset and rebuild once the storm flows past. So it's a work in progress, but authentic self is a great message, I think, to finish on.
Harrison, thank you so much.
Thank you both. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of Beyond Leading, the podcast that cuts through the noise to get real about leadership, team dynamics, personal growth, and the messy, brilliant reality of work, life, and everything in between. Don't forget to sign up for your episode fact sheet at beyond-leading.captivate.fm. You'll also find the link in the show notes, and we'll email it straight to you. If today's conversation sparked something for you, please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and share this episode with a colleague or friend. Please join us again for more conversations that challenge the status quo, spark real growth, and help you lead beyond the title and everything in between. And if you'd like to support the podcast, we'd love it if you left us a quick review on your podcast provider or on Podchaser. It really helps others find the show.